The Last Word with Matt Cooper.
And you're welcome back to The Last Word. It's Ian Guider in for Matt today. And it is Wednesday, so that means it's Culture Club time and time to meet our newest member, who is Andrea Mara, best-selling crime author, whose latest book, Someone in the Attic, is out now. It is your seventh book, but one of your previous hits, All Her Fault, is going to be turned into a streaming series on Peacock, starring the one of the Succession stars, Sarah Snook. We'll talk about that in a little bit later. But Andrea, thank you very much for joining us on the Culture Club.
Thank you for having me.
Listen, you've done lots of books over the last number of years. This is your seventh, which is out now, Someone in the Attic. But you've been a writer for a relatively short period of time. What's your background?
My background is in financial services. So I lived in a world of spreadsheets and emails, and I was very happy there until they said, sorry, we're closing the office and you can either move to Luxembourg or India or take redundancy. So I didn't think my family would be thrilled with being uprooted from their schools and friends and my husband's job. So I took redundancy. And I was planning to look for another job in financial services, but I had started blogging and I decided to give it 6 months and see could I make a go of writing for a living. So that was 9 years ago, and I'm still avoiding going back to get another proper job.
And the lure of crime writing, how did that come about?
So I always had stories rattling around in my head. Like, I mean, I would be sitting in a meeting in work in my old job in financial services, and there would be maybe a video call that was kind of getting a bit long and boring. And I'd start to wonder what would happen if, say, like mass gunmen came into the room in Luxembourg, in the other office, and would we call the Irish police or the Luxembourgish police? And it would be really weird because the video screen's only 3 feet away, but we can't do anything about it. So, you know, my mind would be wandering into those sort of dark corners. And it seemed like a really big piece of work, though, to actually write a book. And then one day somebody commented on my Facebook page, an Irish author called Margaret Scott. She commented to say, you should write a book. And I was like, OK, there's the nudge I needed, or the permission maybe. And the next day I started writing what became my first book.
And you're now on to book number seven. As I said, Someone in the Attic. It's a fairly gruesome start. Somebody is dead on page four.
Yeah, poor Anya. So that's not a spoiler, because you do find that out really, really quickly. And I think it's in the blurb on the back as well. But Anya is taking a bath and she's thinking about life. She's not a terribly nice person. And you get that sense within the first few paragraphs. And she hears rustling above and she's wondering what the rustling is. She thinks it's mice. And the bathroom door is open to keep the condensation at bay. And she starts to notice that the attic hatch in the landing is beginning to open. And she's kind of taken aback. How could that be happening? And then she sees a masked figure coming down from the attic. And then all you hear is that Anya is no more.
And then we won't give away the rest of the book. But Andrea, let's start off on your musical choices. And can you remember the first single that you perhaps bought?
The first single, I think, was Madonna, was True Blue. And I was a very tiny Madonna fan back in the day, growing up in Carrigaline, County Cork in the 80s. And I think I was buying albums more than singles at the time. So it might really have been the album, but we'll just like use a bit of poetic license there. But I was obsessed with Madonna. And my best friend Sarah was also obsessed with Madonna. And we used to do things like walk across the long grass in the green on a rainy day in bare feet as a sacrifice to Madonna, which only makes sense when you're a preteen, I think. I don't know what Madonna would have made of our sacrifice to her. But
let's have a listen to True Blue by Madonna.
Thank you.
That is True Blue by Madonna, the first single you remember buying Andrea Marr. But you, as you said, you're more of an album person. So what is your favourite album?
So I went nostalgia for this and I picked Radiohead, The Bends, because it reminds me of a time I was on my Erasmus year in Germany. So I think it was probably 96 or so. And the way teenagers, well, I might have been 19 or 20 at that stage, the way we do at that age, you just play the same albums over and over and over again, and everything has deep, deep meaning. And I was just completely obsessed with that album. So if I hear it now, it just transports me back to this amazing year that I had in Germany back in the 90s.
Well, let's have a listen to Fake Plastic Trees by Radiohead, as you said, from The Bends.
Green plastic watering can for a fake Chinese rubber plant and a fake plastic girl. What you bought from a rubber man. Time for the rubber plants to get rid of itself. The world's around. The world's around. The world's around.
That is Radiohead, The Bends album. Andrew, are you one of those people that still put on your Spotify playlist? Are you still dragging up all the same people that you had when you were much younger?
Yeah, like I inflict everything on my kids now. So like they're obviously listening. They're 12, 14, 15 and 16. So they listen to what people their age listen to today. And then I'm like, no, come on, you have to listen to this really old song from my childhood. But the great thing is TikTok often brings back old songs. So I'll put something on and they'll actually know it because it's on TikTok now. Not Radiohead so far as I know, but that's given me some inspiration for what I'll do when I get home tonight.
You talk about playing Radiohead over and over, and we have Madonna there as well, but your favourite artist right now is somebody who's a bit more well known to a different generation. I think every generation knows who Taylor Swift is. What is it that makes you a Swiftie?
Well, I think it would probably be a stretch to call me a Swiftie, but if I had to pick something that I like listening to on Spotify, it's probably Taylor Swift, or maybe it's just because we are going to her concert next week.
How did you
here
get
in
tickets?
Dublin? Four of us all day long on laptops one day last summer. I will forever remember it as Taylor Swift Day, and my two daughters and myself and my husband all on laptops trying to get in, and my husband got there eventually by pure fluke. So I guess she's fresh in my mind for that reason. I think she's a genius songwriter. Like that, she has, I think, more than 200 songs, and they're so catchy and they're so fun. And I think it's also because all of my family, my husband and my three kids, all really like her music as well. So it's something unifying for the family. Whereas, you know, if I'm putting on Radiohead, I might not get as much joining in from the kids.
Well, let's listen to Cruel Summer by Taylor Swift.
Dream high in the quiet of the night, you know that I caught it. Bad, bad boy, shiny toy with a price, you know that I bought it. Killing me slow, out the window, I'm always waiting for you to be waiting below. Devils roll the dice, angels roll their eyes, what doesn't kill me makes me want you more.
When you've got great songwriting like that, I think it cuts across to generations.
Yeah, it does. Like she's a poet, and I suppose songwriters are poets. And you know, you can take her songs at their basic level of really catchy tunes that you find yourself singing along to. But when you listen to the lyrics, there's always something really interesting there. And yeah, I admire her so much. I think she is a real-time genius.
Yep. And you're one of the lucky people who'll be going. What night are you going?
We are going on the Sunday night.
Hopefully the weather will be great for that one. Let's move on to gigs as well. Tell us about some of the gigs you've been to over the years.
So the one that stands out, and it's always really hard to just pick one, but for me, I picked Green Day in Marley Park, which I think was maybe in 2010. And I was there on a summer's evening with my husband. My two older kids were babies. They were like 1 and 2 at the time.
Not exactly Green Day's audience.
Yeah. And my youngest wasn't even born. So I think we'd had 2 years of, you know, that world of nonstop kind of feeding and changing and lack of sleep. And it was our first concert in a long time. So it was really exciting. I remember we were like two giddy kids arriving in Marley Park, and it was a beautiful summer's evening. It was my first time at a gig in Marley Park, which is this fabulous natural amphitheatre. And it was absolutely gorgeous evening, probably June, though I couldn't say for sure. And I just loved it. And Green Day brought me back. I used to listen to Green Day a lot during my J1 summer in America. So that was when I was trying to be like all cool and American.
Did you ever see them over the States?
No, no, just listened.
And you never chased a band around?
No, we never had any money. We were like working and then going to the bars every night with our fake IDs. So we never did anything as cool as chasing a band around. But the being at the concert brought me back to that. And the really cool thing is my sisters surprised me with tickets for their concert, which is in Marley Park next Thursday. So I'm going back.
So that will be something you're looking forward to. And sadly, we don't have Green Day from Marley Park, but we do have Green Day singing American Idiot live.
Under the new media, can you hear the sound of hysteria? Lost all blame on my fuck on neck.
That is Green Day with American Idiot, one of the concerts you remember from Marley Park. And you get to go again, Andrea, in a couple of weeks' time. Let's bring things back to your writing for a little bit, because as I said, 7th book coming out. You have absolutely stormed to the charts, hundreds of thousands of copies. What is it right now that we have seen so many Irish writers at the top of the crime bestseller list?
Yeah, well, I guess it's one of those rising tide lifts.
And so many women, because this traditionally was an area dominated by men.
Yeah, we're all breaking out now. I think it is a kind of a rising tide raises all boats thing, because I think women see someone who's writing a crime book and thinking, oh, I don't know if I can do this. But then they see other people who are exactly like them going out there and doing it and kind of think, OK, well, maybe I can do it. And that's kind of what happened to me. There were people I saw who seemed like very normal people. They weren't these mega stars. They weren't people who had done masters in creative writing. They were just normal people writing books. And I thought, OK, maybe I could give it a go. And so I think there's a little bit of that. And I think there's also an uptick in readership for psychological suspense and domestic noir kind of books. And I think women like writing and reading those kind of books in particular, because it's a lot of thinking about the fear within the walls. So it's not always about the serial killer from the TV screen or from our imagination. It's about the real dangers that exist in our own houses or in our neighbors' houses or close to home. So like my books are set in just normal suburban neighborhoods, kind of similar to ones I live in. And it's that idea of the manicured lawn and the clean car gleaming in the driveway and the perfectly nice house where everything looks pretty and good and wholesome on the outside, but behind closed doors, what's going on?
Has social media helped people discover writers that traditionally they wouldn't have heard of before?
I think definitely, like, Instagram in particular is a fantastic place because people will buy a book, put the picture up on Instagram showing the book cover, and book covers are beautiful, so lend themselves to Instagram, and they'll tag the author, and then it's, you know, the author can reply, can reshare the story. So it's a really nice way to connect. Like, I think when I was growing up, if I had the opportunity to connect directly with authors of books I was reading, that would have blown my mind. So I think it's a really good element of social media, and Instagram in particular.
Book number 7 is number 8 on the way.
Oh, it is. Yes, that's been sent in, and one round of edits done, waiting for the next round of edits. So that's called The Wrong House, and it will be out sometime next summer. And I've just started the one for the following year.
How different is it to be a crime writer from your background? Because as you said, you have a background in the funds industry.
It's really different. Like, one example, I would say in my old job, by the time it got to 6 or 7 o'clock on Friday, I'd be like, oh, thank God, no more emails. It's over for the weekend. Whereas with writing for a living, emails tend to very often be good news or interesting news or exciting news. So when it gets to 6 or 7 o'clock on a Friday, you're like, oh, that's it now till Monday. Nothing else can happen. So it's really different in that sense. But on a more, you know, serious note, I suppose you have to be very disciplined. Like, I'm my own boss. If I don't sit down every day between my school drop off and my school pickup and just write the books aren't going to happen. So it would be tempting to just swan off to the shops or meet people for coffee, but I just have to be very strict at myself and sit there. There's no performance review at the end of the year like there would have been in financial services, but there would be, there's no book on the bookshelves, which would be even more serious situation to find myself in.
Let's move on to things on the screen that you are particularly fond of. And let's go back to potentially your favourite movie of all time. What are some of those you like first before we get to it?
What sort of movies I like? I love a thriller involving journalists for some reason, which sounds kind of niche. But things like Spotlight, I really like that. And I like mysteries, murder mysteries, crime of any kind, but also a feel-good movie, which is kind of what I went for in the one I picked. And anything nostalgic, like I keep telling my kids, films are just not the same today, sounding like the oldest person in the world, and they're not quite believing me. But I just feel like we had what I think was a golden age in the 80s and 90s when you had all of the kind of Breakfast Club and Back to the Future and the one I picked, which was Ferris Bueller's
Day Off.
Which is
an all-time classic, which is Ferris Bueller. So let's have a listen to a little bit of Ferris Bueller's. And this is one of the classic scenes from it, when Cameron, one of Ferris Bueller's friends, makes a prank call to the school principal, Ed Rooney, pretending to be another friend, Sloane's father, so that he can get her dismissed from the school and they can spend the day with Ferris. Let's have a listen to this.
Ed Rooney.
Ed, this is George Peterson.
How are you today, sir?
Well, we've had a bit of bad luck this morning, as you may have heard.
Yeah, I heard, and I'm all broken up. Boy, what a blow.
Yeah. Well, it's been a tough morning, and we've got a lot of family business to take care of, so if you wouldn't mind excusing Sloane, I'd appreciate it.
Well, sure. No, I'd be happy to. Yeah, you just produce a corpse, and I'll release Sloane. I want to see this dead grandmother firsthand.
Ed.
It's all right, Grace. It's Ferris Bueller, little twerp. I'm going to set a trap and let him fall right into it.
Ed, I'm sorry. Did you say you wanted to see a body?
Yeah, that's right. Just roll her old bones on over here and I'll dig up your daughter. You know that school policy.
Oh?
Was this your mother?
No, my wife's mother.
Ed Rooney's office.
Hi, this is Ferris Bueller. Can I speak to Mr. Rooney, please? Thank you.
Hold.
I'll tell you what, dipshit. You don't like my policies. You can just come on down here and smooch my big old white butt.
Ed!
Pucker up, buttercup.
What?
Ferris Bueller's online, too.
You're laughing all the way through that, and I've just realised I didn't even tell people about what Ferris Bueller was about, because I just assumed everyone has heard about Ferris Bueller because it's such a classic.
Yeah, like I'm crying laughing here. Like I only watched it again a couple of years ago and it still holds up amazingly. It's still just as funny as it ever was. And you know yourself, some films you watch and you're like, ooh, God, wow, did we really find that okay back in the day? But this one, I think it stands the test of time. It's just such a classic and still so funny.
Is it something you would watch with your children? Would they say, oh God, this is so 80s, who cares?
I talked one of them into it and she really liked it, and I'm still working on the other two because, of course, yeah, they think that just because it's from way back when, it must be awful. But yeah, I'm determined they're going to see it and they're going to love it.
Let's move on to your theatre choices. Maybe tell us about some of the things you like before we get on to your actual pick.
I have to confess, I don't get to go to the theatre very often. So like I went recently, and the last time I had gone before that was about 10 years ago. So that is something, having gone recently, that I thought, okay, this is so enjoyable. This is so lovely. I need to start going again. So that's my mid-year's resolution.
But the one you've picked, now sadly we don't have a clip of it, but it's The Pull of the Stars, which is of course Emma O'Donoghue. So tell us about it.
So I went along to that with my three sisters in the Gate Theatre recently. And it
tell us about the story, about it, what it's about, for people who haven't heard it.
So it's set in a hospital, and it's about two women who are pregnant and they're due to give birth. And it's set over the course of, most of it takes place over the course of a night in the hospital, and the doctor who's trying to take care of them, and a girl from a kind of a home across the road, like I think she was born in, say, a mother's and baby's home and then kept in the home and made to work there. So she's sent across to bring one of the women across and to help out. And it's the bond that is created between those women over the course of the night, and There are some tragedies. I won't give anything away, but it's really, really absorbing. It's really, like, I bawled my eyes out at it. And I had said to my sister as it was starting, I was like, this isn't going to be too sad, is it? And she's like, no, it's fine. And then at the end, the two of us, tears streaming down our face. And she's like, I forgot. She had read the book and she had just forgotten that actually it can be quite harrowing in places and very emotional, but really, really good.
I'll get onto your book choice in a moment because I want to spend a bit of time on that. But let's get through some of your TV picks, because some of them go back to the classic era, I'd say, of TV, which is the 80s, which it was one of those periods that I remember some of these TV shows. So tell us about some of the things you started watching growing up.
So I loved action and crime, and still do. So back then it was things like The A-Team and MacGyver and The Fall Guy and Remington Steele and Scarecrow and Mrs. King. That sounds like a kind of a niche one. I don't know.
Things lots of people won't remember at all. Or if they do, they'll think these ones are the originals, not the remakes.
Yeah. So, I mean, like, to me, sitting down on whatever night it was, Saturday night, to watch The Fall Guy, hearing the music coming on, like, it just absolutely.
People now are thinking of Ryan Gosling, not of Lee Majors, which again, a lot of people listening will have to be Googling as to who this was.
Yeah. And like, I thought they were like cutting edge shows back then. They were probably ancient. Like, I remember another one I loved was The Famous Five, which people might remember. It used to be on a Friday afternoon, and we used to race home from school to watch it. Now, this was the 80s and this had been made in the 70s, but I thought it was live and I thought it was being recorded in a studio in England. And I couldn't understand, if I was barely making it home from school on time to see The Famous Five, how were those actors getting from their schools over to the studio for the live recording on time? That just baffled me. But I find TV so nostalgic. I love the memory of watching all those really, really great shows when I was a kid.
Actually, we'll play a clip from The A-Team, because a lot of people didn't like the remake of the movie, but the original TV show, which ran for years, was an absolute classic, I think. And we'll have a clip from it now. And this is where Murdoch breaks the team out of a prison after they've been jailed for a crime they didn't commit.
The night of the road has arrived. Anyone have a flat?
Yeah, what took you so long?
Did you ever stand on line at the post office? If I could impose upon you for a moment, would you be so kind? Would you mind looping this hook around the bars? The Knight of the Road knows how to start the engine. Stand back, gentlemen, for your safety. Stand back.
Thank you.
My nostalgia is kicking in from the A-Team as well, from the late 1980s, watching those on a Saturday evening. Look, let's bring some of your other TV choices up to date. What do you like watching now?
Well, one of my favourites is Schitt's Creek, which got me through lockdown. And I had heard it was good. And I was like, I don't know, we'll give it a go. And we kind of put it on one night, letting it play, let it play into the second episode, started sitting up, paying more attention by the third episode. And by the end of the first season, I was in love with every single character. Anyone who's watched it will know exactly what I mean. I think so I've heard people say after a couple of episodes, oh, I don't know if it's that funny. And I think the thing is, you have to fall in love with the characters, which can take a season. But then once you're there throughout, and you would literally feel like, I would die for these characters. They matter so much to me. And it's just, it's got such heart, such warmth, such joy. It's so funny. And it is really and truly probably my favorite TV show of all time.
Bit of drama in there as well, you like?
I mean, I love Succession.
Who doesn't? It is the classic one now that everybody likes, particularly people in media or in and around the media industries. Love it.
Yeah, I mean, it's so well written, and the acting, and just watching their faces while they're acting. Like, I just think what you might call the face acting is just so
good.
You've
got a little connection to Succession as well, don't you?
Yeah, I do now, which is great claim to fame. I had the very pinch me news 2 weeks ago that... So my book, All Her Fault, is being adapted for screen, and I didn't know who they were going to cast, and they were keeping it under wraps until they knew for sure. And then I got some emails 2 weeks ago to tell me that they have cast Sarah Snook, who is Shiv
Roy,
Succession, as the main character Marissa in All Her Fault. So I nearly collapsed when I heard that.
She is absolutely fabulous. But the book itself, it's another great little story. Just tell us about the premise of it.
So All Her Fault is about a woman who goes to collect her son from a play date. And it's the first play date with this particular child. So she hasn't been to the house before. She rings the bell and a woman she doesn't know answers the door. And she says, hi, I'm here to collect my son, Milo. He's on a play date. And she's kind of thinking, maybe this is the nanny. And the woman says, oh, I don't know any Milo. I think you have the wrong address. And she's checking the address, and they do a little few checks over and back and know that she has the right address. But there is no play date. Her son is not here. And little by little, she realizes it was a fake play date and her son is gone.
And that is going to be coming to the Peacock streaming service, hopefully in the next year or so, will we see it?
Yeah.
That's going to be fantastic. Let's get back to your TV choice, because you mentioned it is Schitt's Creek, and we do have a bit from it. One of the classic scenes from it, and this is Moira Rose and David, where they're attempting to make enchiladas. And it is that scene where, do you know how to fold in the cheese?
A quarter cup at a time. A thin stream. It's supposed to be a thin stream. Blend it really well. Or you'll burn. David, that's not right.
Okay, well, that's because I'm ladling and stirring at the same time and you're just standing there.
Now's not the time to lose focus, darling.
This was your idea. You're the one who allegedly made the enchiladas.
Yes, so try to keep up. Okay, next. Now's the time to sprinkle in the chili pepper flakes.
We've already done that.
What number are we on?
Oh my God, is this not your mother's recipe?
Yes, and now I'm passing it on to you. So try to keep up. Next step is to fold in the cheese.
What does that mean? What does fold in the cheese mean?
You fold it in.
I understand that, but how do you fold it? Do you fold it in half like a piece of paper and drop it in the pot, or what do you do?
David, I cannot show you everything.
Okay, well, can you show me one thing?
Here's what you do. You just fold it in.
Okay, I don't know how to fold broken cheese like that.
Then I don't know how to be any clearer. You take that thing that's in your hand, and you...
If you say fold in... One more time.
It says fold it in.
This is your recipe. You fold in the cheese then.
Don't you dare.
You fold it in.
David! Oh, good. Now I see bubbles. David! What does burning smell like?
Oh, that is the classic, isn't it, from Schitt's Creek. Listen, we are getting almost out of time, but let's go through your favourite book now.
So the book I am going to pick is We Begin at the End by Chris Whitaker, which is quite a recent read from maybe 2 or 3 years ago. And it's about a 13-year-old girl called Duchess Radley and her younger brother, Robin, and a police officer who is trying to look out for them from their local town called Wark. So his name is Chief Walker. And it's a crime novel. So it's about a 30-year-old murder. And the person who was imprisoned for the murder, called Vincent King, has just been released from prison. And Duchess and Robin's mother, Star, who's the older sister of the murder victim, is falling to pieces over what has happened. And then there's a present day murder as well. And so you're reading it to find out what's happening, what happened 30 years ago, what happened now with the present day murder. But it is also hugely about the characters and about the relationships. So it's about the way Duchess, who is not your typical 13-year-old, she's very she's very sharp-tongued, and she curses and swears a lot. She takes no nonsense from anybody, and she can be pretty horrible to most people, but she really looks out for her younger brother, Robin. So she minds and protects him at all costs. And then Chief Walker is trying to look out for the two of them. And there are some really heart-wrenching moments in it. And, you know, I read some of it with tears rolling down my face. And it's very funny, too, because Duchess is, I suppose, unintentionally funny because she's so spiky with everybody she meets. And it's a fabulous murder mystery where you're trying to work out what happened all the way through. And it's just absolutely fantastic.
That's We Begin at the End by Chris Whitaker. Andrew O'Mara, thank you very much for joining us in the Culture Club.
The Last Word with Matt Cooper. Weekdays from 4:30. Today.